Hey guys, Shane Meeting Report here. I drive across the state sometimes at work. At dinner time, I always stop at Arby's, get the same thing. Beef and cheddar, curly fries, side of cheddar, and small jamocha shake. I'll be enjoying it while listening to TBTL. Power out.
TBTL.
Guess what day it is? Guess what day it is?
It's Friday. Friday. Gotta get down on Friday. Everybody's looking forward to the weekend.
I made this coffee yesterday.
But it tastes like you made it today.
That's because I used yesterday's coffee. It tastes like you made it today.
That's a time saver. Remember that time you left a comment underneath that YouTube video and someone replied and called you a dumbass, so you replied and told them it takes one to know one, and then you stayed up all night hitting refresh on your browser waiting for them to reply, and then you fell asleep crying?
I remember it differently.
This is like that.
Okay, T-Bone, time for some serious crunching.
Sometimes I just like to, build the anticipation. I like to build the drama, if you will, before I say the first words of a Friday morning edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
This is a disaster. I mean, this is something that should not happen.
My name is Luke Burbank. I am your host.
You ain't no rapper. You more like a TED Talk set to music.
Coming to you once again from the shores of Lake Michigan. This must be a really big lake. Almost a great lake. I didn't realize. When I said it must be a really big lake, I forgot that they're called the Great Lakes. When I was flying over here from New York City, I don't even know if it was Lake Michigan. Not long after leaving the greater New York airspace, we were on a Great Lake. I don't know the geography of them, but I just know that, like, I was like, oh, there goes Manhattan. Oh, now we're over a lake. And I was like, these are really giant lakes. But I guess someone else figured that out, which is why they're called the Great Lakes. This is called the OK Podcast, known as TBTL. It just might be too beautiful to live. It's episode 2793 in a collector series.
Let the fun begin.
Boy, Vitamin Water says if you can abandon your smartphone for a year,
I'm trying to use the phone!
They will give you, if you are the lucky contestant who gets to play this game, you will get $100,000.
That cash could really get me out of a couple of jams.
I mean, we should wait until it's time to really do the show, like, to talk about this with Andrew. But I'm, like, to have this conversation, I swear to God, I'd do it for, like, you know what? I'll ask Andrew. The number that I would accept monetarily to not use my smartphone for a year is really low. Like, I've been paying other people to try to get me to stop using my smartphone. So we'll tell you the details of this deal that could get you out of a couple of jams. We will talk also about an upcoming TBTL extravaganza. It's our Valentine's show. We need your stories of love, of crushes, of things that are romantical in nature. So we'll tell you how you can help us out with that. And because it's a Friday edition of the show, we will have some music for your weekend. So that is all coming up. First, though, we have to welcome this guy. The guy is a nut bar. A nut bar. He's not one of those college types, though, that's going to talk your ear off. He bought a fish taco, but it doesn't mean he thinks he's better than anyone else. He's in it to win it. But he's asked me to introduce him now with this new title each day. Instead of longest running Cobro, he wants to be known.
Please welcome God's one and only voice of comedy.
So I guess that's what we're doing now. He's Andrew Walsh, and he joins us from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. Good morning, my dude.
Good morning. I didn't say I'm the one and only voice for God's comedy.
Yeah.
I am one of God's voices.
Please welcome God's one and only voice of comedy.
I am one of God's voices of comedy, I would say. I'm out here. I'm telling the jokes. I'm doing the work. But I'm not the only one. There's a lot of us, and we're all doing our part.
Maybe that should have been our first tip. that Mike Warnke, who that clip is pulled from, who I've mentioned on the show before, that may have, it should have been an indication that Mike Warnke was maybe not really doing God's work, was not really a former high priest in the Church of Satan who turned to a life of stand-up comedy, but was in fact a compulsive liar.
Or a charlatan.
Charlatan is maybe a better way to put it. But yeah, like, nobody who was really of, you know, they say if somebody was of the Lord, they wouldn't say they're gods. They would not say this about them.
Please welcome God's one and only voice of comedy.
They would know that God could move through many, many people and many things, really, to present comedy to the world. It would not just be a guy from the South with a mullet and a kind of creepy mustache who I thought was the funniest person on planet Earth from age like 7 through, I don't know, 11 or something. Oh, with Randy Stonehill being a close second. Randy Stonehill wrote the song Big Ideas in a Shrinking World and also Stop the World I Want to Get Off, which were Christian songs about contemporary Christian music.
I see. He did like novelty, like funny Christian music. Wow, that's
niche. I guess, you know, it was Weird Al, but not actual direct parody. So it wasn't like he did more popular pop songs, but the Christian version, like Big Ideas in a Shrinking World. It has the sound of, like, you know how like Weird Al would do, some of his songs are not just direct. They're like, I want to buy me a condo, I want to buy me a Cuisinart. He would sing songs that were just kind of, lyrically silly. That's more the vein that Randy Stonehill operated in.
Like Garfunkel and Oates or something along the lines of that, maybe.
Imagine an unfunny Garfunkel and Oates.
Okay.
Is this on VHS?
Economy is shrinking.
Oh, this is Big Ideas in a Shrinking World.
Our money is a joke. We should go back to trading seashells. And just admit that we're broke. The food supply is shrinking.
Now, wait a second. Can you pause this?
Yeah.
For what it's worth, this is an acoustic stripped-down version. The real version is way more on the album. Which I assume is not digitally available, is much more produced and kind of, it does actually sound very Weird Al-y. But let's just listen to it.
He looks like Weird Al.
I know. I think he was kind of the Christian Weird Al in a way, although he wouldn't have described himself as such because he was writing original music that he was performing.
But I mean, it is amazing. His style is, he's got the big wire glasses. I am looking, by the way, Randy Stonehill is.
Oh, this is fine. I guess the reason I clarified is because this is actually kind of like chill and downbeat and coffee house. And like this, maybe when I was a kid, I would have heard this and I would have been like, this is too quiet for me. Like I was digging on the overproduction and the like synthesizer that was in the original Randy Stonehill version of Big Ideas in a Shrinking World. It had a little like the Buggles, a little Video Killed the Radio Star kind of energy to it.
Well, the thing is, like, he's got, I'm a little confused here because he's got every single one of his albums going well into the 2000s and the 2010s, by the way, up here on Spotify. I just can't find this particular song. You've really piqued my interest.
Does he have a new one called Cool Ideas in a Warming World? We can't prove that men are responsible for it.
That that was two albums ago, it looks like. All right, let's just go back to this. This is a very clearly a VHS dub. The quality is very low, but I'm loving it. By the way, I saw we mentioned our friend Angie on the show yesterday. I saw her on her Instagram yesterday. She's got an Instagram filter for video now, so it basically emulates a VHS camcorder from the 90s, even with a little bit of the tape warble around the edges and like the timestamp. Remember the old digital white letter blocky timestamp? I got to say, there's no need for us to make our videos quality lesser or degrade the quality of our digital video, but it really got me. It made me feel warm and nostalgic to see that video style.
Do me a little favor here. Do me a kindness, Tony. Tony, could you do me a kindness? Go over to, on YouTube, I'm doing this on my phone now, but there is something called Real 80s CCM, which I assume is Real 80s Contemporary Christian Music, and they list Randy Stonehill, Big Ideas, parenthetically, in The Shrinking World from 1983 off the album Equator.
this.
There you go. Eight-year-old Luke just in the basement on 77th Street, loving it.
Our money is a joke.
The instrumentation is actually better than simply having a wonderful Christmas time. I would like to point that out.
Shots fired.
And just admit that we're broke. And our food supply is shrinking.
Yeah, yeah.
But we continue happily. Building condos on farmland.
Yeah, yeah.
And dumping sewage in the sea.
Of every popular band from the early 80s.
Yeah.
This music.
Those backup vocals are interesting.
You know, it's not... like it, for, that really takes me back, and I'm sure a few of our listeners... But man, I just used to love that song so much. It's kind of funny because, of course, where I have to go with this stuff because of my own personal history is like trying to analyze the messaging.
Yeah, I was
like
wondering.
When he says our money is a joke, he could either just mean like inflation, or he could have been in that world of like my parents were in where it was like, oh, the Antichrist is coming back because there's one world currency. Like all of the stuff that people... not all, but much of the stuff that people talk about now with the, you know, kind of the conspiracy theories. Man, my parents were like maybe not hardcore believers, but like that stuff was flowing around my life in the 80s. But then he also says, Randy Stone, I'm not saying that's what he means. I'm saying I'm trying to analyze if that's what he means. He also talks about building condos on the farmland, which it's like a Neil Young message. Like, let's stop doing that.
Yeah.
Like, I can get down with that part.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. I was going to say, is this a dumb question? What is his thesis for this song and why am I finding it hard to pin down?
I think that it's because he doesn't have a thesis is where some of the difficulty in pinning it down
here,
is coming from.
I found, I mean, not that the lyrics are hard to hear, but I just wanted to see them
again.
Let's
see if we can figure out what the overall message is.
I just want to point out that I could not just find a lyrics page for this song, but I did find somebody 2 years ago, in 2016, somebody wrote this blog post, Randy Stonehill, Social Insight from a Musical Jester. And this was written by Joe Edmund Anderson on his website Resurrecting Orthodoxy. And let's hear. Okay. He says, consider the very first lines of the song. If they don't get your attention, nothing will. The economy is shrinking. Our money is a joke. We should go back to trading seashells and just admit that we're broke. And our food supply is shrinking.
First of all, yeah. The economy is definitely not shrinking.
Yeah, no, that is a good point.
That's absolutely... In fact, I would say I don't know. I'm going to embarrass myself. I don't think our economy has shrunk in a while. Maybe in the 80s it was. I mean, there was an oil crisis and all that.
Anyway, yeah, sorry, yeah, maybe that's a good point. This is
of
83,
late, the
by the
is
way.
Not shrinking, though.
So this is a very early 80s. You know, maybe you're coming off of the oil crisis. The economy is shrinking. Our money is a joke. We should go back to trading seashells and just admit that we're broke. And our food supply is shrinking. But we continue happily building condos on farmland and dumping sewage in the sea. So,
now, the sewage in the sea part, I just heard something about that. There's actually a great piece in the Seattle Times from Thursday. We're recording this on Thursday as well, but you're probably hearing it on a Friday at the earliest, about the first orca whale ever in captivity, which this guy had in, like, Elliott Bay. I forget the name of the orca whale, but basically what happened is it got caught in a fisherman's net in Alaska. And this guy who was obsessed with them flew up there, bought it for $8,000, brought it back to the Northwest and bonded with it. Like it lived in this huge sea pen and he would scrub its belly and he was the first person to ever ride an orca whale. And then the orca whale died because they were dumping sewage into Elliott Bay and it got sick and died from it.
Oh.
So maybe that's what Randy Stone was talking about. We're dumping or dumping sewage in the sea.
Well, it gets even, I mean, maybe you know these better than I do. Our water is shrinking. All the pipes are in decay, but don't think of it as water. It's more like soup of the day. What the shit, Randy?
Flint. He knew about Flint, Michigan.
Yes, but even that doesn't make sense. And our air supply is shrinking. The sky is turning brown. We're getting cancer of the cancer just from walking around.
It's a little nihilistic, really, if you
think about it. It really is. Our compassion is shrinking. It's the ultimate crime because we could save the starving millions, but we can't seem to find the time.
Big ideas in a shrinking world.
Yeah.
What are the big ideas? There's a really, at this point, as I often say, more questions than answers with this song. Is it that the ideas of being good to other people are big, but the world's getting smaller? Or is it that the ideas of being selfish and taking advantage and dumping your waste wherever you want, those are the big ideas and they're making the world shrink? I think the issue is that the song is just it's kind of like a Larry King news and notes.
It is.
If there's a better musical than Miss Saigon, I haven't seen it. No man should have more than one pair of pleated pants. What? Okay. Now, I joke, but that's, first of all, also like what the show is like and what my Twitter feed is like.
Right. And also, I don't think that people should have pleated pants at all, although I do know that those 90s fashions are coming back. But I do think that this is like, it's very of the moment. It's kind of like, oh, yeah, we're killing the earth and we're killing ourselves, but it doesn't really tie together. It's unclear what the solution is, although he's clearly making a call for more compassion.
What's in the chorus? What happens? Big ideas in a shrinking
Unfortunately,
world.
Unfortunately, I don't have. This is just like excerpted for the Resurrecting Orthodoxy article.
Genius is not covering the Randy Stone.
Would you be interested in me reading some of the context around it, though? So this is what I think this might be interesting. I'm kind of reading this a little bit cold, but this is Joel Edmund Anderson's take on this song. Are you, like me, fed up with the empty promises that come from Washington? Wait, what about those clowns down in Congress?
Praise the Orthodoxy blog.
Are you sickened by the madness and stupidity that is our current political system? Well, big ideas in a shrinking world might be for you. Simply put, please be simple. Please be simple. Simply put, big ideas chastises all those politicians who trot out their, quote, big ideas you hear at every party convention and every political campaign, but then who turn around and just continue to let things go to hell. Politicians try to paint themselves to be the saviors of our society, but they're actually the ones most responsible for our society's demise. If this song isn't directly applicable to the fiasco that is the presidential campaign of 2016, I don't know what is. This was written in 2016. And then at the end of the song, after talking about the saber rattling some politicians engage in and in the threat of nuclear war, Stonehill drops these lines. Our compassion is shrinking. It's the ultimate crime because we could save starving millions if we find the time. Ouch. After a number of funny and clever lines that actually address serious problems, Stonehill just hits us between the eyes. People are starving in the world and we're too busy with the incessant banalities that make up so much of American pop culture. Who's bringing pop culture into this? I'm sorry, but Joel Edmund Anderson is bringing his own baggage to this, I think. What does this have to do with pop culture at all?
Well, we're operating at a bit of a disadvantage because we don't have all of the lyrics to the song. And I, for the life of me, can't remember any more of it than what we just heard the audio of. Mm-hmm. So maybe there are some references in the end that he's referencing in the back half of the song. You know, musically, the song was, I can't, so I mentioned the singer Keith Green on the show a lot, which we would listen to on family trips and really just around the house. And I have to say, there's a lot of this music from back in the day that I get a good feeling from listening to it just because it's nostalgic.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You know?
Oh,
and so, I can't separate how much of it is my nostalgia. Like, that song actually was less, other than, you're right, the message was not super coherent for me, but the musicality of it and the whatever, it certainly took me to a kind of a happy place, but I think that's because the happy place is me at age whatever. I have a specific memory of dancing by myself in my basement to that song in, mm-hmm. It would have been probably. I doubt we bought that Randy Stonehill record when it came out. So 83, I would have been 7. So I bet you it was probably more like 84 or 85. And I remember really just getting down to that. I had the tape, I'm sure.
I'm sure you probably want to get off this topic, but if you don't mind me just offering one more thing from the website of Joel Edmund Anderson. He also has a song that I'll bet you know, Randy Stonehill does, called American Fast Food. Do you remember that one?
Oh, American Fast Food, what a stupid way to dine. I totally forgot about that.
I'll play
American
it.
Fast Food, order me the jumbo fries.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to play a little bit of it in a second, but I want you to share Joel's take on it. And I think this is refreshingly honest. To be honest, one of the reasons I loved this song so much as a kid was that there is a giant belch in the middle of it. But hey, it's about American fast food. What do you expect? Do you want to guess what Stonehill's opinion of American fast food is? If you guessed it's crap, you're right. The first line says it all.
Hey, Mickey.
American fast food, order me the jumbo fries. Oh, oh, it's easy.
It's easy, it's trouble free. It's quick, it's quite the fun, just like me.
If I don't stop eating this greasy American fast food, well, we're undernourished, well, we're overfed.
Yeah, he is not,
you know,
into fast food.
At least this one is coherent.
Yes, I agreed.
You know, I think he makes it we're undernourished, but we're overfed. I would say he was a proto Michael Pollan.
Yeah, this is very. It's about like food deserts.
Yeah, and who wrote the? He was Eric. Who wrote Fast American French Fry or Fast Food Nation? Whoever that was.
That's not Spurlock, was it? Was that
no?
That was
Spiro super Agnew. Anyway, now we're on to you. Whenever you use that answer, I'll know what you're doing.
Shit.
Anyway, it's
takes you back.
It really does. It really does. All right. So, well, that's our show for the day. Thanks, everybody. Thank the estate of Randy Stonehill. You know, the funny part is he'll probably hear this because, like, I don't think there are that many podcasts talking about him or Mike Warnke. And, you know, that's not fair. I shouldn't conflate or compare the two because Randy Stonehill, I don't think – nobody alleged that he invented a backstory for himself, which that Mike Warnke guy did. You know, I've – let me put it this way. And maybe there were other songs that were much more overtly religious that I just don't remember from that guy, Randy Stonehill. But all of those songs are more like attempts at being socially conscious, I think.
Yeah, just like it
Which
sounds
is
like liberal
cool.
claptrap
like,
to me.
I mean, honestly, compared to most of the religious stuff that I was being foie gras with, or I was the foie gras, or I was making the foie gras as it was forced upon me. That was actually like pretty heady stuff that was not super tied into, say, the Book of Revelations. So I'll give him credit on that much.
But it did tie in with kind of like the aspect of your parents' kind of culture of that led them to make bread in the basement, right? Or I'm sorry, make grain.
Yeah, but see the same thing. Like it's
grain.
Like have grain. Have like a bunch of like Tupperware buckets of grain that could be ground in this grain grinder kind of thing that my dad built in the basement that I don't think ever really got any use. But again, and I love my parents very much. I complain about my childhood a lot, but I also was very lucky because I felt loved. And that's, I think, probably the most important thing you can do for a kid. I'm not being sorry. I wasn't intentionally being coy there. I was actually trying to think through the most important things. I was like food, shelter, love. Love is pretty high up there. And I had food, shelter, and I felt loved. But they did have that kind of generalized, like they would have been the folks that would have been like those clowns in Washington. And I would have been like, well, what do you mean? I didn't as a kid because I was pretty into Randy Stonehill at the time, so I was kind of I
you
was
got
with
it.
Him on this.
But, you get it,
but people get it. But I was like, they would have been like, it's kind of like, yeah, you know, well, our money's shrinking. What do you mean by that exactly? Like, what are you actually saying? And like, they are the kind of folks, and a lot of the people they hung out with, and a lot of the people that you know were in the church I grew up in, and just in the world I grew up in. Had a general feeling of things not being okay and would believe a lot of stuff about you know, conspiracies and about demonic possession and about the government and about the New World Order and the One World Order and the Mark of the Beast and barcodes. But none of it was very, like, it just wasn't really tied together with any kind of consistent worldview or, like, here's why they're making barcodes the Mark of the Beast. You know what I mean? It just wasn't, it was just, but it was, I think it flows out of this just general sense of unease about the world because the world is a scary, weird place. And we, like, it's hard to make sense of it, but if you just kind of generally, like, you'll sort of buy anything and they don't, the ideas don't have to really be consistent. It's it helps, I think it helps make it feel like things do make a little bit of sense.
And I mean, not that all roads have to lead to here, but we're having this conversation in 2018, you know, like, I feel like that has that it's that exact kind of general, well, that's how they get you. Kind of attitude that has led to, you know, the current political state.
I mean, that's what blows me away when I referenced this on yesterday's show, listening to Chris Hayes's podcast and talking about just conspiracy theories and what people will believe. And in this day and age, it's quite troubling to me when you hear about things like Pizzagate and the Alex Jones believers. And then I remember all of the stuff that I took as bedrock truth as a kid because I heard people in my church or whatever talking about it, and it was so much of it is eerily similar, and some of the plots are like unchanged. I mean, secret sex abuse cults have been that's a greatest hit. That record has been number one with a bullet for years. I don't know what it is about that, like why that's just such a popular idea, but I mean, I grew up being told that there were like all kinds of secret sex cults going on. Like, I would have very much believed that the Clintons had a secret sex cult that was run out of a pizza restaurant in DC, and that there were special messages embedded in the menu to let people know what they were going to get when they went there. I would have 100% believed that as a kid, because the adults in my life would have thought, yeah, there's probably something there.
And now you just want to hear both sides.
Now I just want to have pizza.
Now I'm much more pizza focused.
Now I just am usually depriving myself of having carbs. And so I would love to please have some pizza. Okay. On that oddly serious digression, which is where most Randy Stonehill conversations end with me, let's take a quick break, and then when we come back, we will tell you how you can help us out with our upcoming Valentine's Day radio special, and we'll tell you how you might get $100,000 from a major American water company, but you probably won't.
Love is in the air. Everywhere I look around, love is in the air, every sight and every sound.
I hope you like this song, my friend, because I think we're going to be hearing a lot of it as we piece together and then present our TBTL Valentine's radio special, Love is on the Air. We need the listeners' help on that. I'm tempted to say, aren't you proud of how I handled learning that we can't call it, that we missed the window for calling it I'm with Cupid? But I'm the one who made us miss the window, so that's probably why my rage relatively under control.
Wait a second. Hold on a second. First of all, yeah, somebody came up with I'm with Cupid, but it was way past the deadline. We already started the contest of listeners after the deadline that we were supposed to get our materials in. So I don't think that it was you dragging your feet on sending an email saying if we could change the name that stopped us from doing it. I don't think it was ever really a possibility from an APM standpoint. But when you say, was I proud of your reaction, was your reaction a non-reaction? Because I just remember getting an email back from the folks at APM saying it's too late to change the name of the show in a very nice way. And then that was it. Neither one of us responded, I think, right?
Yeah, but in this case, a non-reaction represents real growth for me.
Then yes, I guess I'm proud of you.
Because, like, you know me, it's like my brain goes into, like, because if I get excited about something, like I thought, oh, I'm with Cupid is such a clever name.
It really is.
Then good. If someone is saying, if somebody is saying, yeah, we already sent out the digital assets, my thought is, yeah, but like, how many stations have programmed that into the DAX?
before Christmas. Like, that's kind of like that's just, what I was
it's
thinking
just not
too.
A real I don't think it's a huge issue, but it's fine because we missed the deadline, and then I was supposed to, like, during the week that we were going to, like, ask about it, we on the show, I said, let me ask about that. And then I totally forgot to. So it was like, it was on me and we had missed the deadline. And that's just how life works. And we can use it next year if we do another show. So it's all fine. But when I'm depending on just, like, you know, depending on how I'm feeling in a particular moment, if somebody's telling me no, and I think the thing they're saying no about is, I think they're being overly officious or it's not really an actual obstacle. I have been known to not take it well, which is 100% my problem. But in this case, I was able to just say, like, okay, it is what it is. And I know that's not a huge accomplishment. But for me, I'm glad that I could have also seen a world where I pitched a fit and it would have been so dumb. I'm just glad I didn't.
Yeah. And I got to say, like, this is one where maybe you're a bad influence on me because and I want to reiterate, I doubt the people we work with on this are hearing this exact conversation, but they might be. But this is what I would say either way.
We are the number one podcast about APM.
Among APM employees. In fact, No.
There's so many podcasts they like more than ours.
Oh, that's true.
As far as podcasts that are mostly about logging in, VPNing into APM products and Kronos, of those podcasts, which I think we're the only one, I think we're pretty high on the charts.
Would you say that we're the number one podcast about the Itasca audio management system?
Yes. Do you ever see an RV and not, like, it's called Itasca, and not think about our work?
Oh, I know. I didn't know that it was the name of an RV. I met somebody whose, like, little sister, like, in the Little Sisters program, is named Itasca recently. I was like, oh, my gosh.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's a kind of a cool name.
It's pretty badass.
It's where the Mississippi starts, right? What is it?
I thought it was thought it was a river. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's where the Mississippi
starts. I think it's the beginning of the Mississippi River, if I remember right, which makes the fact that that software or that system we use called Itasca, I think that makes it make a little more sense.
Oh, you're right. It's a lake. It's not a river. I was wrong. And it is the headwaters of the river. So good on you for remembering that.
That's how you can help out with our Valentine's
special. Yeah, but I was just going to say that, like, the person that we're working with for all of this national broadcast stuff is super cool. Like, he's been really great to work with. He's given us a lot of flexibility in our timeline. He is, like, when we couldn't come up with a show idea for this, he gave us a bunch of suggestions. And, like, generally speaking, I just think very well of him. I've never met him in person. But this is where the system's coming into play, and you being kind of a person who doesn't think that we should just go with things because that's the way the system is built. Like,
the bad boy of public radio, I believe. Right.
Oh, you're Elvis Mitchell. You know, he did say, you know, the newsletter has already gone out. The promotions have gone out for these holiday shows that we're doing as a package. And, you know, there's a chance that stations have already started promoting it with the original name Love is on the Air, not I'm with Cupid. And I got to say, like, part of me was like, listen, everybody's got their job to do, and I've been in his position before many times, and I'm much more of a company man when it comes to that stuff. But part of me was kind of like, all right, let's just admit it, that this is a systematic thing. There is no station that is already promoting a Valentine's Day special leading up to the 2 weeks before Christmas. Like, I've worked at stations before. I know that people are just trying to figure out fill-in schedules and who can take off and what board op you're going to be able to get for the holiday specials that are running. Like, nobody right now is kind of like, God damn it, APM. We had this whole promotional thing going for Love is on the Air in February, and now you're calling it I'm with Stupid.
If there's a station doing that, I would like to humbly submit my application for working there.
Yes.
I will do any job at the radio station because that is now my favorite station in America.
Because they have their shit together? Because they're thinking so far in advance?
No, because they are clearly high on the Walsh Burbank brand.
Yeah.
They're like, I mean, if they've prioritized, if a station, if a PD has said, let's start promoting Love is on the Air right now, that person is really simpatico with us.
Yeah, they are into it. They're like, holiday schmoladays, when can we get to I'm with Cupid? Anyway, it's not called I'm with Cupid. It's called Love is on the Air, which is still a good...
The point of that observation by me, also just to say, is not that anyone in this situation did anything wrong. It's that I have a hard time existing within even the most understanding and normal rule system, which is what we have to have so that things, like, I mean, just in general, in the world, we need some rules so that things can happen. And it's so hard for me to exist within the rules of anything if at any point those rules conflict with what I feel like I need in that moment emotionally.
Right.
But that's, you know, That's something I'm working through with my therapist, and soon, hopefully, with a horse. To listener Lloyd, who reached out and said, "What's up with the horse therapy?" I have not yet done it because of the scheduling, because I'm in Chicago and whatever. But it will happen, I promise. And I will give a full report to everyone when it does happen. Okay, back to Love is on the Air, the TBTL Valentine special. What is this exactly going to be, my friend, and how can the listeners help out?
Oh, shit. I was going to ask you that. All right, the idea is loose right now, but I'm into it. I basically just want to hear a bunch of stories about, like, fun stories mostly, but poignant stories, any stories that people want to submit via their voice and our voicemail line, talking about romance. I'm thinking I would love to hear a show that is filled with listener stories. We could play your voicemails on the show, or we might call you back and interview you, or we could pre-tape something. I don't know exactly how it's going to work, but I would love a show that is just filled with people talking about their first crushes and how that went, or embarrassing moments when they were all flustered around a boy or a girl they liked. For some reason, a lot of my brain keeps on going to kind of young love, but it doesn't have to be young love either. If you're part of a couple, or were part of a couple, where your meeting story, your meet cute, is always a topic that you tell at dinner parties because everybody gets a kick out of it. Any story like that, call our voicemail line, 206-414-TBTL. How am I blanking on the last four numbers? You know it, Luke. 206-414-8285. Yeah. And leave us your stories. It can be your story. It could be a story that you heard from somebody else, although it would be better if it's your own story. And we'll start shuffling through them. And make sure you leave a callback number for us as well, because we might want to call you back and get some more details.
I think it will kind of start to shape the show to what we get.
Yeah.
Because I kind of feel like if it's all just meet cutes, or if it's all just, like, I don't know, romantic stories, or it's all just breakup stories, or having your heart crushed, or first love, or second love. Anyway, if it's all just the same thing, that might get a little bit sort of one note. But I'm hoping that we get a whole variety of stories and observations and things, and then we can kind of, like, go from there once we know what we're dealing with. I want it to be like When Harry Met Sally, all of those interstitial pieces, which I still think are so genius, and I was devastated to find out those are actors.
I don't remember the interstitials. I only saw that movie once, and it was forever ago.
Oh, my God. It's so great. If we could get real people doing a version of that, there's this one. So the movie just has, and it's actually kind of from a filmmaking standpoint or whatever, it's kind of interesting because these are not people in the movie. They're not like characters that are now older. They're just these little interstitial moments where couples are talking about how they met or why they like each other. And they're all older, though. And they're not related to the film in any way, but they're in the film.
That's cool.
They just show up.
Yeah.
And there was this one where this woman says, I'm going to forget the name of her friend, but I'm going to say Maxine. She says something like, she goes, I was at a dance and I saw him across the room and he came over and I thought he was here to talk to my friend Maxine, because people were always crossing rooms to talk to my friend Maxine. Mm-hmm. And then he said, I'm Ned Connor. Of the Coney Island Connors, how are you, or whatever. And it's just like the key. That's like people were always crossing rooms.
Yeah, I love that.
I just love that line. I think it's so classic.
Yeah, I love that style. That reminds me of something that you might even see in a Woody Allen film or something. Like,
yes.
Kind of detached little interstitial things that stand on their own. I love. Yeah, I feel like, I don't know. I was going to start a thought that I don't know the answer to. Are we seeing that kind of, we're living in a very creative age, obviously, when it comes to films and the TV shows and what's going on with our visual entertainment, certainly. But there was something slightly more experimental. Like, I just don't know that you would necessarily see something like that in a rom-com today.
Yeah, the part of the problem is I don't see a lot of rom-coms
exactly.
anymore.
Yeah, that's why.
But I do think that... Yeah, I understand now why you kind of trailed off there, because I have the same impulse right now.
Right.
I want to say a bunch of things about filmmaking, but then I also realize I don't know anything about filmmaking anymore. Like, I don't think I did at any time, but I certainly went and saw more movies. And I guess I would – let me – I do know something about myself, Andrew, and I know that I know about how I tend to react to things. And I would say that, like, it's funny because I think I don't like things to be the same old way, but there are times when if you change up the format of something, it really throws me off, if that makes any sense. Like, there was this movie I just saw the a trailer for I think it's called Roma, and it's getting all kinds of amazing reviews. I think Alfonso Cuarón directed it, and it's a story of a woman, I think, coming to the U.S. You know, I think she's migrating to the U.S., as it were. And it looks like it's shot on digital, and I know that they reshot the ending, I think, recently to make it more kind of like in keeping with the news of the day. And it looks amazing to me, but I also noticed, and this is kind of on the subject of video interpolation, I guess, I could kind of tell that it was, maybe it was a TV I was watching it on. It was like at a restaurant or something. Maybe they just had the interpolation on wrong, but it looked like it was shot in a different film speed than I'm used to. And I guess my point is, we have all this amazing technology now that allows, you could do a whole a movie on your cell phone. You could have lots of parts of the movie where the protagonist picks up their cell phone and is talking on it, and now that's how you're seeing them. There's all these cool ways to tell a visual story, but I think what happens is when people start getting really creative with it, I am like, well, this isn't how I'm used to movies looking. Like, it has to really work for me. I guess my point is I'm less experimental and flexible in my mind than I think I am.
Yeah, and I should, you know, not that even my point before had a point or made sense, but to whatever degree, I want to make clear, obviously there's all kinds of people making all kinds of movies and there's a lot of creativity. It's just like a bird that just comes out of my brain. And so there's all kinds
of Finch, is it?
There's people who are experimenting and doing very experimental things. It's just that when I think of When Harry Met Sally, I think of that as a very mainstream romantic comedy, and you're right, I haven't seen a new romantic comedy in a really long time, so maybe they are still doing some interesting things with them, but it just kind of surprised me to remember that that was in When Harry Met Sally, which is, I just think of as just being a very, very mainstream thing, not something that you would necessarily consider kind of experimental in any way, you know.
Well, I guess it's sort of credit to Rob Reiner.
Oh, right? That's Reiner. Oh God, of course,
he directed that, and then of course you think about Spinal Tap.
Yeah. Oh, right.
Now,
yeah.
Now, let me, because I just have to take everything to Negative Town. Woo, woo. This is the 4 o'clock to Negative Town. All aboard. There are trailers running for this movie with Steve Carell and Janelle Monáe.
Oh, my God.
And,
so
and some others. That's called like Welcome to Marwen, which is based on I can already hear myself saying, and I can already hear the listeners hating me, and I already understand why they are, because I hate it when people say this kind of stuff about things I like.
I don't care. You're right. This movie pisses me off. So
Lynn?
Marwen Call was my favorite documentary of all time, and it is so good. And it is, I've watched it a million times, maybe not a million times. I probably watched it like four times. I loved it. I used to go around telling everybody to see the movie. I saw it in the theater twice, and it's so good. And I'm sorry, I'm stealing your thunder here.
Please,
but,
no,
and,
you have. You are the more amped version of what I'm saying, so run with it.
And what they've done is they've now made some version of this, like, that is not a documentary, but a story with Steve Carell, as you say. I didn't realize it was Janelle Monáe in that. And I love her. I love them both, but like, it looks so goddamn schlocky. And like, well, first of all, there are some parts of the documentary. There's a twist in the documentary that we don't kind of know until the end that adds some major texture to it that I am assuming is not considered in this sort of glossy, cheesy, tear jerky, up with life version that they're shitting out of Hollywood right now. Is that what you were going
to
say?
A bit more or less. this guy in the documentary has been through a traumatic event, and he's built this really involved world of these little kind of military, characters, not dolls, but sort of figurines, or if you could call it that. And it's this really interesting film and really interesting study of this guy and kind of what he's been through and how he's processing. But by the way, from the director of Forrest Gump. I was like, well, there you go. God bless Robert Zemeckis. It's probably a nice dude. But like, the fact that they decide to go into this world of Marwen or Marwen Call, like that they go in, like that the characters, the toys become animated.
They come alive.
If that makes any sense. And you have like this computer generated Janelle Monáe telling computer generated Steve Carell, it's going to be all right, buddy. You got this. High five. Like these computer generated versions of them as these dolls. High five. I just really bummed me out. Honestly, legitimately bummed me out.
Yeah, because the documentary, I mean, it's an amazingly shot documentary.
It's complex.
But it is very complex with some real darkness there. Like you said, like the reason this guy kind of became this outsider artist is because of trauma, both like literal trauma, head trauma. He was attacked, like, and it probably had to do with his lifestyle, I'm sort of guessing from other contexts in the movie. And it's just like, this is just not going to be respectful to the story. But you know what? He's making bank. And if this is his story and this is going to be a life changer for him, well, then I would have to root for him. So
you wonder, though, how like Steve Carell, who it seems so just like such a good dude. I don't know him. I've never met him. But I just like I admire him so much, and I think his work is great, and he seems like just a solid guy, and he just seems like he would be so fun to hang out with. And I feel like he would be like, I love, I've created a like what it would be like to hang out with Steve Carell moment in my mind that I've not based on anything. I feel like he wouldn't be the most talkative guy in the group, but when he said something, it would be well thought out, and he just seems like an interesting dude to me. And so it's like, how does he, obviously he saw the documentary, like that was, if he hadn't already seen it before the film, somebody said, here's what this is based on. How did he go from seeing the documentary to being like, oh, this line where I'm like, they're my friends. Like, how does he know, he's seen that, he understands what the source text is for this, what the source material is. How does he, with a straight face, high five an a cartoonized Janelle Monáe. Like, I just don't understand how his brain allows him to do that, because he seemed like a smart, funny, you know, guy who gets it. And this movie just to me feels like you've really kind of done a disservice to the original thing. Now, like you said, if this is helping him financially, if he's set for life because of this, I guess that's an upside. And I guess, look, I'm going to now say this. If somebody takes their 8-year-old kid and it's an uplifting message, and the 8-year-old kid has their worldview changed a little bit, or it reinforces their worldview of showing love and kindness, does it matter? Mm-hmm. Like, if you just wrote a movie, let's just say there's no Marwin Call, there's no documentary, you just write this movie, these are fictional characters, we're not that mad about it, right? It's just a movie. We may not want to see it, but it's not hurting the world.
Yeah.
But somehow, because there's a real story behind it, it feels to me like it's actually hurting the world for this movie to exist.
And I just think that the art exists in several ways. It started with the art that this guy was making. Now, very, very few people knew about it, but that was the original art. And it was also his coping mechanism, but it was also art by creating this mini universe. But then, other artists/journalists came along and they documented it and then created something else that's really beautiful. And now to kind of see this, you're just kind of like, you keep on doing layers and layers of this until, to my eye, it becomes, you know, less consumable. But, you know, this is typical TBTL.
Less meaningful.
Well,
right?
Well, maybe more consumable to a broader population,
right.
Less consumable,
but less
to
consumable
me.
To you.
But also, I've only seen the trailer. You know, I mean, this is the typical TBTL where you and I have very, very, very strong opinions about something we haven't seen. But I mean, I'm still betting I'm right, that we're right on this. But like,
I think
they
used in the trailer that like, I'm on top of the world song, whatever that is.
I don't know,
like,
that.
Some kind of I'm on top of the world song, because he's on top of the world, because in his world of Marwin he made. I don't know. I hope I'm wrong too. I hope that, like you said, I hope that in classic TBTL fashion, we're talking completely out of our backsides, and this movie is beautiful and nuanced and really awesome. And they just had to do that thing with the trailer. I mean, I don't understand how those CGI doll versions of them. I don't understand that could not be terrible, but maybe it's good. I hope it's good. It's better if it's good than if it's bad. Right?
I just hope there's a moment where this song plays triumphantly.
My heart going.
Now, just if I'm being real, though, I do love this song.
Oh,
movie.
Christ. Oh, I love this song.
This song gets me. But can you find that I'm on? Can you just do a Google search? Actually, can you do this? Because we've done this now. Everyone, can you just find the trailer or the ad for Welcome to Marwin?
Yeah, let's do this here.
I mean, and then I'll stop saying mean things, but okay. I want to see if I'm thinking even of the right song.
Hey, looking good.
There are so many versions of trailers, so who knows if this is the one.
Sure.
Famous Marwin, Mark's art installation.
So that's the guy.
Yeah, it's right up there.
Some Nazi thugs jumped him. It's a miracle he survived.
I was a hell of a good artist, and now I can barely write my name, so my dolls have to tell a story.
At your service, mademoiselle.
I just moved in across the street. I love all the details.
Leslie Mann.
Who are they?
Oh, is that her name? What do I know her from?
She's in the 40-Year-Old Virgin and a bunch of movies. She collaborates with Judd Apatow a lot because she is married to Judd Apatow.
Oh, really? Oh, well, she's delightful.
He's torturing Hoagie.
Why?
Because he's different. The women of Marwin protect me.
You are saved.
A toast, just for you.
Are all of the dolls people you know?
Yeah. Everyone has a place here in Marwin.
I just moved in across the street.
So are you going to go to the sentencing?
You're a suffering human being. I want these guys to get more than just a slap on the wrist. It's important that you're there to look your assailant straight in the eye.
I'm not really sure how to do this.
Were they Nazis? They're really leaning into these being like Nazis and this whole trial thing.
The trailer that I've seen, they keep going like, that's a hate crime. They literally have the word hate crime in the trailer, which I don't remember that from the doc. Not that it wasn't a terrible thing, but I'm almost like it would extra bum me out if there was any way this was updated to seem more like currently relevant.
Yeah, they're really leaning in this because like, they're showing like the Nazi tattoos on these guys at the trial. The documentary does not get into the trial or the case at all. It's just known that he was abducted. And I mean, I guess I'm kind of spoiling it a little bit, the documentary, which is 10 years old now. But I have a feeling that it might have had to do with his sexuality, although his sexuality is never addressed head on in it. So I've always kind of sort of assumed or wouldn't be surprised if it had something to do with maybe gay bashing or something, or just guys who saw this other guy who was clearly different in some way.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, everybody, how about this? If it starts, I'm going to find one more silver lining. If this movie is popular and if it drives a lot of people to see Marwin Call, the original doc, that would be a good outcome. And then, if, you know, everybody who sees that and if they like it and then they see this movie and they like it and it makes their day better, then great. Then yay for this happening, I guess. Or I don't know. I feel like I'm just like such a little rain cloud sometimes. But
well, wait till you see the trailer for Welcome to Winnebago, man. That's really going to piss you off.
One fly, two, five fly. We got five flies. Is there anything better than Camaro Kev doing a Jack Rebney impression? Son of a bitch. That was great. You really helped get the nose up on the negativity flight that I had captained, that I had hijacked and tried to take to the island of negativity.
We have to be so next week is our last week of kind of live shows, like shows that we record day of. Of course, we do have a whole 2 weeks of special holiday programming that we've been working on that we're going to have packaged. But I want to say that next week we have to make a very conscientious effort. I think I will make a very conscientious effort to get the nose up on the negativity train as we head into the holidays, especially because I don't feel like you and I have been all that negative lately. I think we used to be more negative, but then like I don't feel bad because I didn't say anything I don't stand by, I guess. But I want to say it was Tuesday's show, me getting into ugly sweaters and all of that stuff. I was kind of like, I stand by everything I said, but also it's probably better. I want people to be able to listen to TBTL and not feel bad feelings. Not even like, I'm not worried about people writing in and defending ugly sweater parties or whatever. I'm sure some people go to them and really enjoy them. Other people don't. That's fine. But I just feel like a big part of my life and personality was shitting on things other people enjoy. And I feel like I've kind of changed in that. And then after, I think, Tuesday's show, I was kind of like, wow, I just served up for the listeners just a bunch of just like me being petty and I'm not even too cool for school, but generally negative.
It's hard, though, because you know, it's like when you talk to somebody like, what kind of music do you like? I like every kind of music. That's a kind of a non-answer in and of itself. And so it's like part of, I mean, yes, I agree with you. I think it's much better for us to not just have so much of the show be about what we don't like out there in the world. But it's also hard to not have an opinion on things, and we're doing it 5 days a week.
Yeah.
And that's also, I mean, I'll tell you this. There's nothing like bonding mutually over hating the same thing. I feel closer to you after bonding over how much we don't like that movie trailer. So maybe the listeners, for every listener who's like, ouch, that's a thing I like, maybe there's one listener who's like, I see you. I'm with you. But you
Did
are.
Just
I think
become
you
are, best friends.
I think you are very right that that the show is better when more of it is positive and uplifting than when it's mostly just being negative. And that goes for most things, I think. But you know what? I don't know. That's a big idea, and this is a shrinking world.
Hey, let me mention one other thing. We probably have to thank the donors of the day, don't we? I totally forgot
about
that.
Yeah, we do.
That. But I just wanted to say one other thing. This is both positive and negative. The positive thing is there is a show out there that I absolutely adore that I think is one of the most best TV sitcoms to bubble up in recent years, and that is The Detroiters. The bad news is, did you see that it's been canceled already?
Yeah. I've only seen like a couple episodes, and I really liked it.
Yeah.
And I'm bummed out that I was having not even seen it. I was still bummed to see that it is not going to be renewed. But what I thought was like one of the guys in the show, because it's kind of like started by two dudes, right?
Yes.
They're like writing partners.
Tim Robinson. I don't know what his background is. But then this guy, Sam Richardson, who's the other kind of guy from Detroit. I think they're both really from Detroit. And you know him from Veep and some other things as well.
He was in Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Oh, he was.
I believe he's. I'm mixing up my movies where people get married in Hawaii. Maybe it was Dave and Dan Need Dates for a Wedding. That might have been, or whatever. There was, anyway, some movie I saw someone watching on a plane. Anyway, he was the groom in it. He seems very funny, too. I was going to say, he tweeted about the end of the show, and he said, hey, maybe we'll get picked up somewhere else. And I thought, we are kind of in that world now, particularly if a show is not crazy expensive to make, which I would imagine that show is on the more affordable side of things. Mm-hmm. And if it has, I know I've heard people talk about that show. Like, I think it did successfully get some buzz. So who knows? Maybe it'll get picked up by some. I mean, all you need is Crackle or somebody else to be like, hey, here's a few hundred grand to make another six episodes.
Yeah.
So maybe that'll happen.
Yeah, I hope so, because I feel like the show just had, I mean, like you say, it had almost a cheap quality to it in its production that I really appreciated, and I'm sure it wasn't cheap, but you know, it didn't obsess over being a super kind of rich show to the eye, but it really was rich, I think, in. It was a show that was just so obviously an extension of the people who were working on the show. Some of the main actors and actresses on that show that I've looked up, it's not actors and actresses, right? You just call everybody actors now. Grow up, Walsh. And like a lot of them were just people in Detroit. Like they're just people, I mean, who were, you know, kind of struggling. They were actors who were getting their start, but they're not known for other things, but they all have these Detroit roots. A lot of the jokes are based on old commercial. It's about these two guys who run a very low-level advertising company in Detroit. And so a lot of the jokes, when you look them up later, are based on real-life commercials that have aired in Detroit, and they incorporate a lot of like kind of well-known Detroit cult figures. It's just a really cool show.
Well, I will watch it now. Now that it's gotten your recommendation. By the way, the Tim Robinson, he was on Saturday Night Live for one season.
Oh, really?
That's where I first saw him.
Huh.
And he had, I forget the character, and we do not need to try to figure this out now, but he had at least one sketch that I thought was genius, and I cannot remember. That's genius work. I can't remember what he did, but I was kind of surprised when he wasn't coming back, because I was like, he did that one sketch that was amazing. But let's actually, you're right, before we forget, before we're done with the show, let us thank some donors of the day. Do you have any donor of the day music, anything with a heavy Tim Heidecker? Let's talk about this on Monday with No Point. Okay, well, I guess I'm gonna say the whole thought, which is, you know, Thanos. The person, we don't know if it's a guy or not, the person who's making the Seahawk videos.
Uh-huh.
I've been watching those, and I realized what I love about them is that they have a very Tim and Eric quality.
Yeah.
I mean, then maybe that's not an insight. But it was like, because not every joke works. And honestly, I feel mildly embarrassed around the whole idea of us being like, we're the best. Because even though I want to think that inside, I'm not comfortable with the outward expression of it. But I was like, this just is like something that would have happened in the early days of Tim and Eric. And that's kind of what I love about it.
Oh, absolutely. And even the we're the best aspect of it is kind of tongue-in-cheeky, right?
I hope so. Yeah, it's
that's
funny.
Part of the whole joke.
I think so. It's just the editing style. When I was watching the latest one this week, I was like, this is so Tim and Eric to me. And it just makes me laugh so hard.
It's Cable really Thanos. If people, because I don't know if we're
Cable
clear on
Thanos.
That. Look up Cable Thanos if you guys want to know what we're talking about. Because at this point, Luke and I are only talking to each other clearly. So.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, as far as what we care about, we're only talking to each other. And as far as who's hearing this conversation? We're only
talking
to
you're
each other,
probably so. Right.
Well, hopefully there's still some donors of the day around listening, so they know that they're being thanked because they're making this gab sesh, this hot goss sesh between two buddies. They're making it possible today, and they're people like Jared Miner of Birmingham, Michigan.
There's nothing
Josh
minor
Thompson.
About his donation.
That's sorry. Right.
Sorry.
Josh Thompson of Amherst, Massachusetts. Aaron Matheny of Hammond, Louisiana. Dang, this is a really great distribution
today. I love
this,
yeah.
Jennifer Stockall of Stockton, California. That's almost like if I was named Luke Burbank, which I am, and I lived in the town of Burbank, California.
Stockall in Stockton?
I might have said this last year. This was I'm having deja vu, but that could be for a variety of reasons. Kevin Johnson of Marysville, Washington, and then Jeff Zapata of Seattle. Jeff, Kevin, Jennifer, Aaron, Josh, and Jared. Thank you very much for donating to TBTL. Thank you for helping us do this. Thanks for making it possible for this to happen. As of today, 2,793 times
My God.
A collector series. Thank you for being patient with us when we make fun of a movie trailer for a movie that you and your family love. Thank you for going with us and not being like, I am personally so brittle, Andrew, that if I was supporting a show and then the host said something that ticked me off, I'd be like, I'm done.
Oh, it's happened.
It has, but not from these people.
Not from these folks.
Not from Jared, Josh, Aaron, Jennifer, Kevin, or Jeff. So thank you so much. We really do appreciate it.
All right, I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now. But have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I got to say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
All right, let's hold that conversation over. I actually do think – I know you sent the story about this – I'm now not saying their name for some reason because it's obviously a PR stunt. This water company is running this promotion where they're going to pick somebody and they're going to give them $100,000 if they can stay off their smartphone for a year. And it is a publicity stunt, and it is – I mean, it's a smart one, I think, because here we are talking about it, and I'm sure much more listened-to programs are also going to talk about it. But as I read the article, I had some real questions just from a practical standpoint. So let's talk about that on Monday.
Yeah, that sounds good.
If we can, because I do think there's kind of something there. But for now, maybe we should talk about some music for your weekend. And I have a little bit of a – I have a something I don't usually do, which is – like, I don't usually suggest kind of novelty tunes or songs that are, like, intentionally bad. But I heard this song. I was listening to the Howard Stern Show this week, and they had a whole segment on depressing Christmas music.
Mm-hmm.
And they played a bunch of them, and some of them were like insanely depressing. Like, I can't believe this got recorded. This one I just thought was funny, and I can't believe I hadn't heard it before. And so I don't know. Have you heard this song before by John Denver?
I have seen. I think I have, and I'm looking now. The Decemberists did a cover of it. I definitely know of it, but I couldn't sing along with it.
Well, this is John Denver. It's my music for your weekend. It's a Christmas song, everybody. It's "Please, Daddy, Don't Get Drunk This Christmas" by John Denver. Take a listen to this.
Please, Daddy, don't get drunk this Christmas. I don't want to see my mama cry. Please, Daddy, don't get drunk this Christmas. I don't want to see my mama cry. Just last year when I was only 7, now I'm almost 8. You can see, you came home a quarter past 11 and fell down underneath our Christmas tree. Please, Daddy.
This song is interesting to me for a few reasons. It's kind of, it's oddly upbeat for having such a serious message. It's also the kind of thing that I think had I kept drinking and had I had younger kids, they might have written this song about me.
Yeah, this would have happened.
In like 15 years. I've been drunk at a lot of Christmases, and I think I've thought, I wonder who's noticing.
Yeah.
Well, John Denver, apparently. It's also sort of like, you can write a song about anything, obviously, and there are lots of songs that are about very serious topics, but one wonders what the goal of this song was. Was it to sell records? Was it to be a message about sobriety? Was it to, I mean, you know what I mean? Like, was it just to be a catchy number that you just, you know, a catchy Christmas song that, like, what do you think John Denver's intent behind the recording? I don't know if he wrote that song or not, but the recording of that song. I wonder what the intent was.
Classic country, though, right? I mean, that's from the era of country where country music was known for just being kind of down and out and realer than real and, you know, talking about things like being broke as hell and too drunk and, you know, that type of thing. I mean,
maybe because it's John Denver, or maybe because it is the, but see, it was recorded. It is in, as we say so much on this show, to me, it's in this uncanny valley. If it were Hank Williams Sr., it would make sense to me, or Patsy Cline, it would make sense to me. And then, well, actually it's not in the uncanny valley. It's just after the time when that was sort of how songs were in my mind. Like country songs, like it kind of is like it's a little too modern for me to. I wouldn't have expected that song to exist in the more modern era, unless it's a cover. It might also be a cover of a 1950s song. I don't know, but I don't know. I was entertained by it, which maybe is also the wrong response. But I heard it this week and I thought, let's throw it out there. What are you selecting for your music for your weekend?
I'm actually just going to play the song that Phyllis sent us. Actually, we've played a lot of Christmas music that Phyllis has been sending us.
Yeah, who knew of her many talents, and they are many, that just like Christmas music recommender is a real strong suit for our friend P. Fletch.
And I also love the origin of this. This is not a song that she has known her whole life and listens to every Christmas. She says, I heard this in the JCPenney Sephora shop at Northgate Mall this week.
Dude.
And then she came back and she looked it up. I can almost smell the Sephora perfume on this email, by the way.
I mean, I said dude because I wrote this tweet this week that was very much ripped from the headlines of my life. I was in this Starbucks across from the hotel in New York, and I heard a song, and I Shazammed it because I was like, the song is really good. And I just thought about how much I used to make fun of the seat. Like, they'd sell that at Starbucks was a real insult for a piece of music or like a CD. And I am now, I've aged into the demo, I guess, because I'm like, hey, they got some pretty good jams in here.
Well, I'll tell you one person who found that tweet relatable, our boss, Mr. Mike Resler, because he liked it, right?
He did like it. And again, that was the tweet that, and the liking of the tweet that made me realize, oh, there are people that can see this, what I do on here.
Yeah.
Maybe I should think about it. And then I forgot to remember that. And then I've probably posted 9 million borderline things since then. But I did have a moment of thinking, I should be more careful about what I tweet.
Okay, so here's what I love about this. So Phyllis hears this song at JCPenney. It is a kind of a remix of an old song from the 30s. It was written by Irving Berlin, and the performer is a woman named Kay Starr, and she's kind of a blues singer of the era. In fact, I was reading a little bit about her in the description of this. Kay Starr is an American pop and jazz singer who enjoyed considerable success. This is from Christmastime TV, by the way. Let me see here. She did a lot of jazz and blues and stuff like that. Here's what I wanted to get at. Billie Holiday called her the only white woman who could sing the blues. Anyway, so Phyllis also says that she looked it up, and the YouTube comments are from retail workers who've been hearing this in their overhead speakers since 2004. They are alternately charmed and aggravated, because what this is it's an old song by Irving Berlin, and written by Irving Berlin, performed by Kay Starr, but it's remixed in a way that I really like. And I actually, don't tell me whether or not you like it if you listen to it, Luke. Tell me afterwards, because I could see, okay. I understand why people are alternately charmed and aggravated by this, but I am definitely in the charmed side of things. So here you go. This is remixed by somebody who goes by Stur, S-T-U-H-R. This is the Stur remake of K-Stars, I've Got My Love to Keep Me Warm. What do you think?
Is that Heidecker on the bass?
I think it is.
I love that. I've seen that. I think I've heard it in a TV commercial, actually.
Oh, I saw somewhere that this maybe did have its origins in a TV commercial.
But it was. I remember just kind of, you know, hearing it briefly as it was on TV and thinking, oh, that's a really cool version of that song. So I love that. I would absolutely play that around the holidays. No, I think that's. I'm a fan of any of that kind of, you know, like there was a lot of people that would, there was a kind of movement, I think, in the sort of like late 90s, early 2000s of a lot of DJs remixing kind of old stuff from Birdland and, you know, whether it was Miles Davis or Billie Holiday or whomever. And I'm a sucker for that stuff because it just brings together a couple of things that I really like.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. I really like that as well. And I thought that it would be in your wheelhouse because we've talked about other things that are kind of like that from, again, us growing up kind of in the 90s. I thought that would ring your bell, but I wasn't sure.
Yes.
Okay.
It's really ringing my bell. Hey, our listener suggestion this week comes from listener Jill. Jill says, "Dear Luke and Andrew, I recently discovered A Fairy Tale of New York by the Pogues. According to Wikipedia, in the UK, it is the most played Christmas song of the 21st century." Are we in the 21st century? That's now, or is that? Yeah, we're in that now, right?
Mm-hmm.
I always get confused about that because the 1900s is the 20th century.
Yeah, I always have to do. It's almost like the people who have to, before they say left or right, they have to like pretend to write something with their hand or something. I'm that way with the century. I always have to think, nope, the 1990s were the 20th century.
This song has also been called the best Christmas song of all time by various television, radio, and magazine related polls in the UK and Ireland. It is not your typical sappy, happy Christmas song, which is why I like it. You know, it's funny. I have seen this song. I wouldn't say I'm a big fan of the Pogues. I am a person who is very interested in what is going on with the teeth of the lead singer of the Pogues, Shane McGowan. Like, he is just, in fact, looking at him is and reading interviews with him is has, even before I stopped officially drinking, it was a good, it was, it helped me pump the brakes at times, because he appears to be,
he's lost them all at this point, it looks like.
And he's got some dentures now, which is a big improvement, but for many years he just had, his teeth were just in various states of disrepair. And he was still fronting this band, the Pogues, and they were very popular. And it was always one of those, like, people would say, oh yeah, the Pogues. And they go, have you seen the lead singer's teeth? So I've always been really interested in the Pogues. I know a couple of their songs. But when you do any kind of search for Shane McGowan, or you'd search for the Pogues, this song always comes up. And I don't actually know if I've ever listened to it. So, but I know that people sure love it. So this seems like as good a time as any. So this will be listener Jill's music for your weekend submission. It will bring us to the end of our broadcast week. I want to say thanks to everybody for listening. Thanks for being a part of TBTL. We would not be doing the show without all of you out there listening to the show and telling your friends about it and rating us on iTunes and donating and sending us emails and song suggestions and all of that stuff. So thank you very much. And please have a great weekend. I hope it's full of merriment and holiday cheer and friends and family and all of that stuff.
And Browns, and we'll be watching back on Saturday. Go Browns.
Major. Oh, Saturday.
Saturday night.
Well,
game.
Well, well. Interessante. So, yeah, there's that to look forward to as well. So we will see you on Monday. Until then, please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
Power out.